Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast with you. We had Nick Caserio on yesterday. Here was his answer to Seth's question about the possibility of Deshaun Watson still returning to the team.
It's a good question. You know, I think, you know, there's been some commentary and, you know, that more than likely would not be the case. But I think, to your point, again, like you mentioned, I think we just have to be open-minded and just take the information and process it and ultimately make the decision, you know, that we feel makes the most sense for everybody involved, whatever that looks like.
This is one that I think has been misquoted somewhat in the in a lot of articles that I've seen. There were a couple yesterday that I've seen misquoted. I've been asked questions about it in interviews that I think that people weren't quite listening to the answer. He said there's been commentary that might not be the case or won't be the case, and I think that largely people got rid of that there's been commentary, and the headline has been that Caserio says that Deshaun Watson probably won't be back.
Yeah, he basically was saying other people are saying this.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. He's like basically saying there's reports out there that that's the case, but we're actually just going to listen to everything. So I think he was actually very non-committal on that. But as it happens, like these are the things that get picked up nationally anytime there's any perceived information about Deshaun Watson. I think that was actually more of a no comment by Caserio.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And there was nothing about that answer that makes me think it's more likely that Deshaun Watson plays for the Texans. You know, I think that's not a question where Nick Caserio is going to give a definitive yes or no.
Right. Yeah. There was, I kind of almost, because there was that report that the Texans would be, who said that? The Texans would be thrilled if he came back, if Deshaun Watson decided to come back. It was a weird report because they actually used the word thrill.
Yeah.
And it didn't sound at all like a lot of things that we have heard. But I was kind of curious if that were the case indeed, that the Texans would be thrilled if he decided to come back, that maybe Caserio would want to throw something out hinting at that, and he did not.
That was Jeff Howe.
Okay.
Jeff Howe, where he tweeted, and we'll get to something Jeff Howe wrote yesterday, right, Seth, from The Athletic?
Yeah, Jeff Howe from The Athletic.
Jeff Howe from The Athletic, who's got ties to New England. He's covered the Patriots, I believe. He covers the NFL in general right now for The Athletic. But he's been a new name on the Patriot-Texan radar over the last month or so. And he said Watson's issues have been with ownership. This is from January 11th, so a week ago yesterday. He tweeted Watson's issue, which, by the way, coincided with Brian Flores becoming available as a head coaching candidate when he got fired by Miami. And Brian Flores and Deshaun Watson reportedly are fond of one another. Watson's issues have been with ownership, not the coach. While the Texans would be thrilled for Watson to reconsider and remain in Houston, they don't anticipate a coaching change will be enough to change his stance. That's the tweet that you're referring to from about a week ago.
But we haven't heard from anybody else that the Texans would be thrilled, excited, ecstatic, scintillated, whatever.
Well, and thrilled does that thing that you really dislike, I dislike as well, where it conveys degrees of emotion on people who aren't the reporter.
Right, right. Well, that's what happened. We remember when Jadeveon Clowney was inactive for that playoff game, and he left to go take some tickets to his family out in the parking lot, and it was reported that he angrily stormed out.
Lisa Salters, yeah.
How the hell do you know what his emotional state is?
Right.
And don't infer emotion or emotional state from whatever information you got, unless they actually have somebody with Cal McNair saying, "Yes, I would be thrilled if Deshaun Watson came back." Then I don't need you claiming what emotion the Texans would have about
it. Then if you're a good reporter who's trying to build a following, you throw quotes around that bad boy then. Like you're directly quoting someone who said they were thrilled. So I think they're still trading Watson. I think something, Seth, that we've not talked about when we start to get excited or maybe not as excited about some of the candidates to trade for Deshaun. Did you want to hit something real quick?
Oh, no.
Okay.
I was just thinking of different ways to say thrilled that sound even better. Like, is this something we're going to get a tingled about?
Yeah. The teams that could trade for Deshaun, I think one of the things that we don't take into account, and maybe it's because if it's Deshaun Watson, teams will find a way to make this work, but the salary cap space. Deshaun's deal, this just in, is massive starting this season. For the Texans, it's over a $40 million cap hit because they've got some signing bonus money that's sunk into his cap figure. For any other team trading for Deshaun, it would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $35 to $40 million. Yeah. Texans are over $40 million with Deshaun. One of the reasons why Miami may be so hyped up to do this, they literally have the most cap space right now. That'll change once teams start cutting guys and trading guys and whatnot. But as of right now, the Dolphins have the most cap space of any team in the league, according to SpotRack, $68.5 million. So they can easily absorb a Deshaun Watson into that.
And depending on, you know, which NFL insider that you want to listen to, there's varying reports as to, like, oh, no, it was actually only Brian Flores that wanted Deshaun Watson. The owner didn't even want him. But then you have our Jeff Howe friend again weighing on this.
Oh, yes, read this.
He says that Stephen Ross was all in on it. And what Jeff Howe said was that Stephen Ross tried to set up a phone call with Deshaun Watson. Stephen Ross, the owner of the Miami Dolphins, tried to set up a phone call with Deshaun Watson the night before the trade deadline to see if he would resolve his legal situation. Watson refused to speak with Ross, so because he didn't want to settle. So I don't know if it was that Watson. If this is true, did Watson refuse to talk to Ross because he didn't want to get traded, or just because he didn't want to settle and he didn't want anybody to try to talk him out of that? I don't have a clue. But it sounds like at the very least, at that point, you got to remember the Dolphins were 1-7.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody thought that somehow Deshaun would come in. And, you know, I know in hindsight it's easy to say, oh, wow, the Dolphins made this turnaround with Tua. Of course they could have done it with Deshaun. When you're 1-7, I don't think you can realistically ever say, oh, yeah, we'll bring in a different quarterback midseason and have him learn our offense and then we'll be awesome. So I think that was probably more of a, like, Stephen Ross had been sold on Deshaun Watson being a long-term answer for the team.
Yeah, I think so. I think a couple things. You just touched on one thing that's really interesting that just got me thinking. Like, yeah, they tried to trade for him when he was 1-7. They went 8-1 down the stretch with Tua. If Deshaun were good enough, the one game they lost was to Tennessee. Remember that? They got blown out by Tennessee. And I'm not saying Deshaun is worth 25 points in an NFL game, but obviously the Dolphins are playing differently with Deshaun at quarterback at that time. They won all those games except that Tennessee game. Let's say Deshaun comes in and he's the difference in them beating Tennessee. Can you imagine what the Dolphins would look like right now, just as far as being a dangerous team in the playoffs with Deshaun Watson as like sleepy sixth seed right now or a five seed in the AFC?
This blitz-happy, opportunistic defense that the Dolphins have, it would be a scary team.
It would be. Now, the other thing,
Seth, Deshaun didn't want to or was unable to settle. That's the other thing.
Well, and that's where this runs totally contrary to that part of the story, because the story was that Deshaun was settling cases right up to the trade deadline because he wanted to facilitate a trade. Remember that?
Yeah.
There were a few holdouts that didn't want to settle, and that's what scuttled a trade to Miami. This makes it sound like Deshaun was just dug in and was still in that mode where I didn't do this. I'm not going to settle. That that, and maybe I'm reading too much into him refusing to speak to Stephen Ross. It could very well be that Rusty Harden was working on a bunch of things, and meanwhile, Deshaun, if his part was actually sitting down and talking to the Miami owner, he just didn't want to do that, or maybe didn't want to do it until it was for sure he was getting traded to Miami.
Gosh, this whole trying to figure out the Deshaun Watson saga is so frustrating. Because there's a, you can kind of get a sense for where things are moving generally, but all the details and the finer aspects are just all over the place. Yeah. You just get little nuggets here and there, and it's like all we can say for certain, because you can't really believe anything that either of the attorneys say, right? No offense to attorneys, but like in this particular case, they're going to represent their clients, and they're going to give the information that, that most benefits them. So you just all you know for sure is that apparently there was, everybody agrees that there was some kind of movement right before the trade deadline to settle those lawsuits.
Yes.
And that maybe they came pretty close. Like, what's that last 5% as to why it all fell through or why it didn't work out? Who knows? But they did come close once before. And I think that might be the thing that has people feeling like, okay, by March or at least by the draft, seemingly, if you got that close back in November, then it seems likely that you're going to actually complete the deal sometime in the next calendar year, half calendar year.
Right, right. That's the hope. Now, by the way, here's what the cap situation looks like for the other teams that could be in on Deshaun, Seth. Denver has the sixth most cap space, a little over $45 million. Pittsburgh, and some of these is me projecting that these teams should be in on Deshaun as opposed to they've been in on Deshaun. Like, Denver has been in on Deshaun. Uh-huh. Pittsburgh is a team I think we think should be in on Deshaun with Ben Roethlisberger retiring. Pittsburgh is ninth in cap space, $42 million. Washington football team, 10th, about $38 million. Cleveland, 14th, about $29 million in cap space heading into next year. And again, these numbers are going to fluctuate and change in cap space, but this is as of right now. Carolina, $20 million in cap space. They are 19th, and they are interviewing Tim Kelly to be their offensive coordinator. We should throw that little breadcrumb in the mix as well. Philadelphia, 22nd in cap space, $12 million. Here's the one that got me. This is the one that actually got me onto this. My son actually texted this to me when we were texting about Deshaun and the trade yesterday. He's like, Pop, I just looked. The Giants are $5 million over the cap right now. So that's troublesome. You know, that's the team we all want him to get traded to because they've got the fifth and the seventh pick. They're $6 million over the cap. Seth, New Orleans is $71 million over the cap. Right
now. New Orleans is astounding at how good they are.
$71 million over the cap.
They're escape artists.
It's unbelievable.
They're like when you see those videos of animals squeezing through small holes.
Yes.
Like a rat in a little pin-sized hole. That's what the... Like a New Orleans rat. That's what the New Orleans people are. 100%. The Saints are able to do.
Yeah. It's crazy. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. John McClain joins us in a little under an hour. All right, let's keep it moving. J.J. Watt, the Cardinals lost badly on Monday night, so another playoff ouster for a J.J. Watt-coached team. Is this it for J.J. Watt? Was Monday the last we're going to see of J.J. Watt, who's still got 1 year left on his deal with the Cardinals? We'll discuss next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional.
Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. John McClain joining us in the 8 o'clock hour. A lot to get into with John. They met for the Hall of Fame committee yesterday, so we'll get his feel on what he thinks Andre Johnson's chances are. The hay is in the barn. They're going to find out with the rest of us in early February if Andre made it or not.
So they've already voted.
They voted.
That was their final meeting yesterday.
Yep.
It was like 8 hours long, Peter King said.
Yep.
Then they voted. And so his fate is sealed.
Fate is sealed. We just don't know what it is. So
for the year.
Yeah.
For the year.
Yeah, he'll get in eventually. But maybe he got in this time. First ballot, that would be something else for Andre Johnson.
I hope John brought some recent pictures of Andre Johnson to the meeting because he's grown his hair out a little bit.
Oh.
He looks like he's 28 years old.
That's right. Yeah, we saw him, you and I, when we did pregame a few weeks ago. He looks good, man. He looks like he could still go.
He looks like, as I always wanted, he could be a rush defensive end.
Yes.
To just stick him out there. Every third and long.
That would have been fun.
Yeah. He's already got the moves, like those release moves for wide receivers. Just run around people and go.
Speaking of future Hall of Famers, J.J. Watt. Here was J.J. Watt following the Cardinals' loss on Monday to the Los Angeles Rams, knocking them out of the postseason.
When you look back at the season, how much of a what if is it going to be for you?
I mean, it was a massive failure. I mean, from what we were capable of doing and from what we showed we can do to today, there's no other way to describe it than as a failure.
Do you think this is it for J.J. Watt? And I asked that, Seth, because, one, it was another season where he got injured. You know, so he played all 80 games of the first 5 years of his career, 80 out of 80. The last 6 years, he has played a total of, in 97 games, he's played a total of 56 of those games.
Okay.
So he's missed nearly half the games over the last few, with four different injuries.
Yeah, and it honestly, you had written 66 at first. I know you know that you corrected it.
Yep.
But like when I saw that, I thought like that doesn't seem right. That seems like way more. 56 out of 97, so a little over half. In some respects that still seems like he's missed more than that because it's just, you know, each time you hear about a catastrophic injury, it ends up being, it feels like it was for the entire season.
Yeah.
With JJ, he's actually come back from two of those, which is incredible that he was able to come back from two injuries that seemed like season-ending injuries. Not just season-ending injuries, but injuries where you'd be out for like 6 months, and then he came back. But it's just been that kind of a go for him. I wonder if he's got 1 year left on his contract with the Cardinals. Are you wondering if, like, his actual team situation factors into
his
decision?
Yes, yes. In his contract, it's not the easiest contract to trade for the Cardinals because he got a signing bonus. He's got some guaranteed money. The Cardinals would get hit, and they may have even shoved some money into some of those voidable years that you've got that the teams have started to do, that credit card spending that they do with the cap. The Cardinals would get hit with a cap hit that's nearly as much. It would cost him nearly as much to play without J.J. Watt as it would to play with J.J. Watt. And so if I'm the Cardinals, I'm going, well, why would I do that? You've been with the team for 1 year. Why would we? The Texans accommodating J.J. Watt is one thing. He's a legend of the franchise. He played a decade here. He's a Hall of Famer. The Cardinals, it's like you played 7 games here or 10 games or whatever it was. So we want you back here next year. Yes, Seth, that's absolutely what factors into it for me because he's 33 years old, he's been banged up, and he's on a team that right now, as of now, is still being coached by Cliff Kingsbury, who you can set your watch to his December failures every year. And this goes back to Texas Tech. Cliff Kingsbury's record for the last half dozen or so games of the year, going all the way back to 2013 when he was at Texas Tech, is 14-47. He closes out seasons at a combined rate of 14-47 since 2013. Every year, he's not had 1 year where, well, there was that outlier where he went 4-1 down the stretch. 1-5, 2-4, 2-4, 2-6, 2-6, 0-5. That was at Tech. And then at Arizona, 2-7, 2-5. 1-5, and he's had Kyler Murray every year as his quarterback there.
That is astounding. That is, it's actually, I'm almost impressed by the consistency with which his teams have collapsed. Now, some of those teams weren't good teams in the previous five or six games either, right? Like that wasn't, it wasn't like every one of those teams was a collapse. Some of those teams just weren't
good
overall.
Yeah, like 2019, they finished 5-10-1. So,
right, right. But having said that, it's still notable that they've never even once in a bad season like had a nice run at the end.
Right.
Like since going back to 2013, that's an entire decade of abysmal finishes to the last six plus games of the season.
Right.
That's hard. That feels like a pattern at this point, man. Like and now obviously DeAndre Hopkins is a factor this year.
DeAndre missed those last six games. Right,
right. But it doesn't explain away all the other things.
You can't go 1-5.
You know, that was kind of the narrative on Sean McVay, and I guess still is, that some people wondered whether teams just got a beat on what the Rams were trying to do in any given season because the offense would tend to fall off. And it started to look that way this year with Matt Stafford, but it seems like maybe Matt Stafford has rebounded somewhat. But that is – it's a question sometimes with offensive whiz kids. It's, hey – you might be great at scheming things in the off season and having some novel ideas at the beginning of the season, but once teams start to figure out what the window dressing is, you become more predictable and easy to beat.
There's a fan-sided article that I saw this morning. I heard Damon Amendola talking about it, so I went and looked it up. This is where I wonder if JJ is coming back too, Seth. Not just because Kingsbury has failed at the end of seasons, not just because, I mean, look, they're still going to be punching up in a division next year that's got the Rams, the Seahawks, and the 49ers in it. This article quotes a bunch of executives, coaches, and sources around the league about the country club atmosphere that Cliff Kingsbury kind of runs in Arizona. Basically calls him soft in the article. Here's what a league source said to FanSided. Honestly, I think it's that Cliff has such an easygoing atmosphere. Leading into week one, the first team never practiced or played together at full speed. Veterans hardly ever practice. There isn't any structure or discipline there. Here's another source. They have just relied on the fact they have superior talent the last 2 years, but when DeAndre Hopkins is out and other guys start going down, that bleep doesn't fly in the NFL. This is from an AFC scouting director. With Kyler Murray a little banged up and no Hopkins, no Rondale Moore, it really lessens what defenses have to do to beat them. And defensively, losing Watt was just huge. He was really impactful. Okay, well, that's not as much about the country club atmosphere. But they basically call Cliff Kingsbury soft and say that he runs. They say he's overhyped. An AFC scouting director says Kingsbury is overhyped, not a good coach. He's all hype and no substance. All hat and no cattle, as they say.
Yeah. And I almost, maybe there's a little bit of like an air raid bias there too. Just kind of just the coaches and the guys that have run that scheme and that system don't always necessarily have a reputation for great discipline, other than, you know, sending a guy off to a sweat hut every now and then. It's not like a tightly run ship.
It's Craig James's kid. He probably deserved it.
It's honestly, though, too. Even that is kind of indicative of, okay, there's teams that they operate with a certain precision.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything's regimented. And, like, air raid offenses, for all the perception of them, you talk to quarterbacks that played in the air raid offense, they're like, we just kind of sit around and listen to Mike Leach talk about Native American history for 4 hours in the meetings. It's very loosey-goosey. And that doesn't always play well in the NFL. You need some sense of a regiment and structure over time, because the season's too long and things unravel too easily and quickly.
What do you think happens with JJ?
I think JJ...
Is there a chance he retires?
Remember JJ... Back in March, it was reported that JJ reported himself that he said he had texted Kyler Murray and told him that he was the reason why he signed with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And so Kyler Murray, as he's underhanding toss-up pick sixes in that
from
game
the end zone,
the other day, and Kyler Murray looked just completely, utterly, and totally lost. I wonder if JJ still believes that Kyler Murray is a reason to be with the Cardinals.
The two biggest reasons you go to a place like that, if you're JJ, are the coach and the head coach and the quarterback, and the reports are not glowing on either of those guys right now.
Do you see they showed in that article, this is circulating around the internet.
Yeah.
It was a tweet from back in March where JJ had said that.
Yeah.
And they have like a screen cap of a text conversation
mm-hmm.
where it makes it look like JJ texted, "I'm here because of you." I don't think it's a real, it doesn't make any sense because that's not the way, like the little blue bubble is dead center in the screen instead of off to the right.
So you think they did the thing where
they fabricated it, making it look like, they did a fictitious representation of it. But when you first see it and you don't realize that this was back in March, it looks petty as hell. Like it makes it seem, when you first read it, it makes it seem like JJ texted Kyler Murray that after the playoff loss.
Right.
Like, hey, I'm here because of you, you son of a bitch.
What's up with the underhanded pick sixes?
Yeah.
Nick Caserio met with Seth and I yesterday. Judging by the text page, this seems to be everybody's favorite moment. We'll play it for you next. This seems to be everybody's favorite moment. We got that for you next. Headlines, John McClain, top of the hour. Stay there.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We'll get to Nick Caserio talking about being on the headset with his next coach in just a second. We'll do some headlines as well. John McClain joins us in studio at the top of the hour, brought to you by hornsolutions.net. This seemed to be everybody's favorite moment from the interview yesterday. It's not an answer to any of the questions. It was just something that happened in the middle of our answer to asking him about, hey, are you open for business for the number 3 overall pick?
Absolutely. Always open for business. You never want to limit yourself Hey, girls, have a good day at school. Sorry, I'm playing a pinch hitter. My wife is on the DL, so I got to get the girls to school. But that's
okay, no problem, Nick.
Sean, it's a fair point. I think, you know, I've always been open-minded.
All right, so there you go. Right back, and boom, just right back into GM mode. I could tell something was about to – I could hear the door beeping in the background, or, you know, the seatbelts getting, and you could hear a little kid's voice like, "Hi, Dad."
I didn't hear
you can barely hear it, very faint back there if you re-listen to it, but
you've got that superhuman hearing of a new mother, Sean.
People, yeah, right.
You're attuned with the with all parts of your personality.
Yeah. People like that moment because it humanized Nick.
Yeah.
It felt like he was less of a football robot there because he actually has offspring and he drops them off at school like 90% of our listeners do on the way in, that kind of thing.
I wonder if I wanted to ask him. I didn't want to. We only have so much time with Nick when we have him on. I kind of got curious about the drop-off situation there. Like, as a football guy, does he have the patience for the idiocy that goes on in front of you
right
when you're waiting? You know, the kids that just don't even bother getting ready to get out of the car after they've been in line for like 5-10 minutes. They their backpacks aren't packed or anything until all of a sudden the door is open.
This is where we can't group all football people in the same bucket. You know, I think there's impatient football people. I feel like Nick actually had calculated out to the 10th of a percentage point before he left the house what the chances would be of him getting somewhat stuck and delayed in the line. So he was prepared for that situation.
He
seems like a patient person.
Probably had the girls all ready to go and everything.
I feel like there's nothing that David Culley has not prepared Nick Caserio for when it comes to scenarios.
I think him talking to David Culley after a press conference was a lot like when you're talking to your kids and you're like, all right, we got to fix this problem. I'm not gonna raise my voice or get frustrated. We gotta talk this thing out. I don't wanna scare them from like being able to confess things to their dad.
He listened to Cully's press conference and he had to go and he talked to his 5-year-old and be like, man, this 5-year-old is making a lot of sense right now. This is incredible. Multiple people have pointed out, hey, Nick's not supposed to be on his phone in a school zone.
Hey, Ixnay on the at raying.
Anne's free. Anne's hey, Efray. Yeah, look, he's free, baby. He's got his on speakerphone. That's what I choose to believe.
I bet Bill O'Brien freaks out dropping people.
Oh,
like that.
God have mercy on the soul of the crossing guard, the kids in the intersection, the teachers trying to calm Bill O'Brien down.
The only thing that saves him. Yeah. Can you imagine him yelling at the crossing
yes?
guard like that?
Yes.
No, the only thing that would save him is that he knows he's a public personality and he knows like how bad that'll look. So I think he's probably had to talk himself. He's talked himself down and done his breathing exercises as he's doing the car line because he knows that would go viral immediately if all of a sudden Bill O'Brien was flipping out on the crossing.
You know how funny it is to picture Bill O'Brien yelling at a school crossing? Ben, play that hotkey.
You suck too! You suck too, motherfucker! You suck too, you!
cursing in front of fifth graders. Oh, God, that's beautiful. That is beautiful. All right, back to Caserio. The matter at hand. As you asked him this question during the interview, Seth, so I'll let you lay it out here. Do you remember what your exact question was about this, about the headset with the coaches? How did you lay this out?
My question was, like, when do you actually broach that topic with a candidate?
Right.
Is that something that you talk about during the interview process, or is it all of a sudden, hey, you've been hired as coach, let's go? I didn't ask it quite that way.
Right.
But that was what I was thinking.
Actually, a great topic. Coincidentally, and, you know, I'm in the process right now of talking to various coaches throughout the league. Matter of fact, I was talking to a coach the other day, and he had asked that question specifically. And I said, I'd be more than happy to talk about it. And if you have looked at my background, which those folks that you're alluding to, Seth, obviously haven't, but when you go back and look at my background, you know, when you're in the press box for 18 of 20 years, a lot of that is just hearing the game, viewing the game, and the responsibilities, I would say, even in New England, were a little bit different. You know, 1 year, I would say it was more hear the play call, write the play down, quality control. Other years, it was, okay, down the distance, hash mark, defensive personnel, get that information to the offensive coordinator so they can determine, you know, what play they want to run, what they want to put in the game. You know, if it's base defense and you have a base run call in your mind as a play caller, if you get that information and tell them, hey, it's base defense, then you might say, you know what, we can't run this run or sub run. Maybe if we're going to be in a multiple receiver grouping, we're better off throwing it. So it's just information flow back and forth. 1 year I was given the offensive personnel to the defensive staff. I remember vividly, I want to say it was maybe 02 or 03, we were playing the Seahawks at our place, and I was given the offensive personnel, to our defensive staff, and I made a massive mistake. I told them it was either 21 or 11, and it was 20 out, so it was three receivers and two backs. We were taking the information as if it was something different. They ended up getting like a 60-yard completion or whatever it was. So, I mean, and you feel horrible, but the game happens fast, and then I would say this year it was more just listening, observing. If there were things that came up during the game that we needed to talk about situationally, then, you know, we would communicate that. So my philosophy and goal has always been to just provide information where necessary, be a resource, and be as helpful as possible, whatever that constitution is. I'm a very amenable person, very open-minded, but ultimately you just want to make sure you try to get things right during the course of the game. And candidly, there's been times when I've been wrong and I've made a lot of mistakes as well. So we all try to learn from that. So I don't think it's a big mystery. I'd say there's other people throughout the league. They have either their analytics person or somebody from their personnel department maybe doing some of the same things. I think what happens is it maybe gets a little bit magnified because of my quote-unquote title and my role. But in my mind, I know what my role and title is, but I don't really look at it that way. I'm a football person. I'm engaged in the game. I was very well trained with a great organization. So you're just trying to take all that information and disseminate it and use it in the most efficient way possible. So I'm never going to shy away from it. I'm always going to be straight up and tell whoever the coach is, if they have a question, try to get some clarity. That's my job and responsibility, is to provide clarity.
All right. He was very enthusiastic to answer that question and clarify.
Yeah, I know. Well, and I think that he's – I think people have asked about it before, and he said – and, like, we knew about this. You know, McClain talked about it a lot before Caserio ever really, like, showed up on campus, so to speak. So I guess it's always just notable when people hear about it for the first time. I think what happens, Sean, and this is totally understandable, is everybody – I think people put themselves in the position of – what if my boss all of a sudden came and sat in my office all day long and was like hovering over me as I did things. And he was there just to help. He was there. And so I think the natural reaction of a lot of people is like, well, gosh, I don't think that sounds like a pain in the butt. That sounds like meddling. That sounds like a guy that is too much of a micromanager. And I don't think it's fair. I think it's understandable to have that fear, but we really don't have any reports or evidence that Caserio needs to have control of whichever coach he's going to hire. Now, Cully was a different case.
Cully needed the help.
Cully needed a lot of help, you know, and that was yes. Whether it was a mistake in Caserio in hiring him, or maybe that was just the kind of guy they wanted to hire for this phase of the turnaround. Whatever the explanation is there, those optics certainly were not ideal, but Cully needed the help. And I do think that if he were to get, like, say, a Josh McDaniels as the head coach, look, he's been on the headset with Josh McDaniels bunches of times before. I don't think it would be an issue.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's – and it was never portrayed from what I'd read and heard about Caserio in New England, it where he was, like, kind of a quasi-GM. It was never portrayed as him keeping tabs on people or telling people what to do. It was – exactly what Caserio just talked about. It was a lot of different roles, but usually more on the, like, hey, everybody lend a hand variety.
Yep. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. That answer and the Easterby answer are the ones that got people the most uptight from the interview. We're going to talk about the Easterby stuff with McLean at the top of the hour.
Having said all of that, Sean, about how I think, like, the intentions and the purpose is – good and true.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that also one of the nice little side benefits there is that you do get to spy on everybody the whole time.
Yeah.
Like you get to know.
Yeah.
I mean, which
voyeurism.
That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's that you can help troubleshoot. I wish more GMs did that instead of sitting up in a suite with a nice suit on, schmoozing with the decision makers, you know, just being distracted by whomever and whatever, like all of that, where they're relatively powerless, impotent individuals on game day. I actually like a GM that gets his hands dirty a little bit.
I'm going to, you know what, Seth? You just gave me an idea. I'm going to put up a poll, a Pender poll on what fans prefer from their GMs. I think people make a lot of assumptions with the Caserio approach. That it comes with some sort of draconian element to it, you know, that it's just this dark cloud and it's cumbersome. And I think Nick paints, and we don't know what it is because neither you nor I are on the headset, and he's only done it 1 year with a coach who absolutely needed the help. When they get an actual competent head coach in here, that'll be when it's more intriguing to hear and see what the operation is like.
Are there actually people out there who think that David Cully couldn't have benefited from a whole bunch of micromanaging by somebody above him?
I think it's more frustration from being 4-13.
Yeah.
I think it's frustration over, you know, that Nick, until yesterday, where I thought he was a lot less vague about things than he normally is. He's normally very vague about things. And I think it's because it's a unique situation that has the appearance of something Belichickian, you know, GM is overseeing the head coach. I think there's a lot of assumptions being made about it when the fact of the matter is it's only been set up this way for 1 year where David Cully was head. That was my feeling yesterday because I saw Ron the show Hughley tweet about it during the interview, and I'm paraphrasing the tweet, but he saw the interview with Nick yesterday as a good interview, but B, also evidence that he is still micromanager Nick Caserio. And my feeling is I can't take anything from the 1 year of Cully and view it as gospel. Now, might he end up being a micromanager that annoys people or that is too overbearing for a head coach? Sure, I suppose that's a possibility. Yeah. We don't know, but I'm not going to use anything that happened with David Cully on the sideline as evidence that, well, this is just how it's going to be moving forward.
I do think that one thing that they do in New England, which I like, is that there aren't necessarily well-defined positions or responsibilities. It's all hands on deck for everything. And if you're good at something or you have some skill, if it turned out that his secretary was really, really good at identifying defensive personnel, he'd probably have his secretary up, Bill Belichick's secretary up, identifying personnel.
Right.
You know, like, in the box on game day.
Yeah.
So whatever you're good at or whatever your skills are, they they have everybody potentially weighing in on everything. That's where the rubber meets the road, though, with the Jack Easterby conundrum, where yeah. I do think that, you know, that's where people are most dissatisfied from yesterday was his answer over Easterby, because they feel like, even though I feel like he, I think Caserio clearly defined what Easterby does, but I don't think people are buying it or
right,
believing it.
Right.
If people just flat out don't want Easterby weighing in on things. And I don't know. I mean, that's the hazard of keeping Jack Easterby around, is that those questions will persist until the Texans have success. People are not going to be happy with Jack Easterby's presence. He's just too associated and identified with the real incompetent era of the Texans. It's hard for people.
There is a glass ceiling on how good they can get the fan base feeling about Jack Easterby's involvement, and the only thing that will break that glass ceiling is going to a Super Bowl. That's it.
Yeah.
Like that's just that it is what it is. All right, 713-572-4610. Text probably going to be the best way to get in touch with us here over the next hour or so, because John McClain is jumping in with us at the top of the hour. Let's do a few headlines here.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, let's start with a little baseball. Shift gears for a minute here. Carlos Correa. During the lockout, a little Carlos Correa news, and we'll assess how significant this is. The headlines read as something that would be very significant. Scott Boras has been hired as the agent for Carlos Correa. So Carlos Correa has moved on from Endeavor, part of the William Morris agency, bit of a Hollywood agency, to Scott Boras, who is, his core business is getting elite baseball players hundreds of millions of dollars, including Corey Seager and Marcus Semien. Semien I would put off to the side. Seager is the significant one. Scott Boras is the one that got Corey Seager, Seth, his 10-year, $325 million deal with the Texas Rangers. Carlos Correa probably saw that and said, you know what? Probably should go ahead and hire Scott Boras to go get me my 10 years and $32.6 million. You know, just one-tenth of a million more than Corey Seager. I don't know if that's what Carlos is looking for, but we know he wants a 10-year deal, and we know, obviously, he wants a 10-year deal for more than $275 million, because that's what he rejected from the Detroit Tigers. But Scott Boras, who, Seth, is also the agent for Jose Altuve, and Lance McCullers is now the agent for Carlos Correa, the most significant free agent journey, certainly in recent history, with the Houston Astros.
And and Alex Bregman, even though Boras didn't get Alex Bregman, his current deal, Bregman has switched over to Scott Boras.
Yep.
I'm always intrigued by just what Scott Boras does, because like in free agency, teams are going to spend what they're going to spend, largely, I think. But I do think that Scott Boras is really good at recruiting big-time clients who are going to command a lot of money. And then I think he's really good at playing the game of knowing exactly which teams are thinking about what. And like where how the entire picture fits together. You know, how and especially when Boras ends up having multiple free agent shortstops, he can kind of almost dictate terms by tailoring who's going to go where he's best suited, and then also counseling those players on what the best fit is for them and what, you know, which offers make sense. So I think really good players love going to Scott Boras, because I think Scott Boras has the best information. So Correa might sign with Boras, and it's not necessarily that Boras is going to get Correa a higher best offer, but he might let Correa know that, hey, this right here is your highest best offer. Sign the deal, you know, and just get it done. Like he can get deals done instead of having guys wait forever or having unrealistic expectations. And likewise, just as it was with Altuve and McCullers, I think when the client himself says, no, I want to stick with my own team, Boras does what his client wishes. He's not always a guy that's going to screw the current team. But having said that, it doesn't seem like Correa has that same extreme willingness to stay in the same place as Altuve or McCullers.
No.
Maybe that's not fair.
Seems like it's the opposite.
Yeah, like, yeah. Maybe that's not fair, though. Maybe Correa is just playing the game better.
No, I hope you're right, because I'd like Carlos Correa back on this baseball team. I don't want him back for 10 years. You know, yeah. I would want him back for 10 years if it was a 5-year deal, and then he looks good and you give him another 5-year deal for a little less money because he's in his 30s. Like if he wants to be here for 10 more years, I would like him to do it on the Astros' terms because I trust their terms more than I trust Carlos's terms.
And by the way, Carlos firing his previous agent is it's a strange story. His previous agency, despite apparently very strict rules about agents not owning minor league teams, Carlos's agency went out and bought up seven minor league teams.
It's almost like they did it to troll baseball. Like, you're telling me I can't buy minor league. It's like a Hollywood agency. Like, you know what we're going to do? Screw you. We're buying nine of these.
Yeah, I don't get it. It doesn't seem to make any sense at all. Like, why any? That seems like an extreme conflict in interest.
Yeah.
That feels like a rule that should be in place that you can't, like, your actual employer can't also be your agent.
Except
I don't know.
The business model for minor league baseball teams is awesome.
Yeah.
Because the major league team is incurring a lot of the labor cost with that, the players.
Right.
Yeah, so
yeah.
It's a good business. To
no,
be
no,
in.
No. I know it's a good business, yeah. But there's a conflict of interest.
No,
there.
I get it. No, I'm just saying. I'm saying just from a purely a business standpoint, it's a smart. You could see why they would want to do it purely from a business standpoint. I get that it violates the rules.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, the.
I wonder if those seven minor league teams bring up like the same as 1 year of commission on Carlos Correa's contract.
It's a good question. You're right. It's not exactly buying Google or something like that. You know, we merged with Uber.
A lot of those things are break-even operations, especially now that you have to pay minor leaguers a living wage and provide them room and board.
That's
at
true
times,
that
yeah.
you actually have to provide them with their cardboard box that they live in, as opposed to saying you got to go find your own cardboard box, buddy boy. Hey, one other minor league baseball thing we should mention. The Sugarland Skeeters, as of next week with their launch party, will be no more. Maybe they're no more right now. They're changing their name. What do we think of the name Sugarland Space Cowboys? Got a little bit of an Astros feel to it with the space part of it. Got a little bit of a Texas feel to it with the Cowboys. I would imagine that there will be a Steve Miller Band concert at somewhere along the way. You know what? Lock that one up right now. Some people call me a space cowboy. Some call me the gangster of love. There will be a Steve Miller Band concert at Constellation Field next season.
You know, there's something.
I'm calling my shot.
There's so many things about the space program from the early days, especially that you kind of. They're not large parts of, like, the main history. So you kind of don't realize it if you're our age or younger. But the Space Cowboys, was that like a. Before Steve Miller saying about it, I'm wondering if that was like a term for the astronauts back in the day.
I can see that.
Well, you know what? I never realized either until I went back and looked at some of the old actual newspaper front pages. Was that like that the astronauts were referred to as Astros?
Right.
Like, I always knew obviously the Astros were named after the astronauts, but I didn't realize that they were just commonly called, oh, yeah, the Astros landed today.
Yeah.
So it was that fell out of favor.
There you go.
Probably because America is soft. They can't handle it. They can't handle the Astros being awesome at everything.
That's right.
Both landing on the moon and winning World Series.
Correct. Yeah. Next headline. Jonathan Gannon, defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles, completed his interview with the Houston Texans for their vacant head coaching job yesterday. So that we've got four candidates now who have reportedly interviewed with, I say reportedly, the team tweets this out when the interviews are over. So they've been very open about who they're talking to. Brian Flores, Joe Lombardi, Hines Ward, Jonathan Gannon. Seth, if you had to power rank the four people that they've interviewed so far with their odds of getting the Texans head coaching job, how would you power rank Flores, Lombardi, Ward, Gannon?
I would say Flores is still in the lead. I'd be excited if they don't hire somebody with New England ties, just because it would be evidence that they're really thinking with their own brain over there. That doesn't mean that I'll be necessarily disappointed with a Patriots hire. It's just that you don't know for sure. It's not such an obvious stepping away and out into the danger zone. There's a danger sometimes in being too eager to be familiar and comfortable with the people you hire.
Yeah.
That sometimes it ends up being an awkward fit and it only felt comfortable because you knew the guy.
Yeah.
And you're not as afraid of the unknown. Sometimes it's good to just step out there and into it.
I think it's interesting. There's going to be more candidates. I think it's safe to say Flores would probably be the betting favorite. He's already the betting favorite amongst all human beings in Vegas to be the next head coach. But among these four, Flores 1, Ward 4, I think you can just go ahead and lock in. The two in between, look, I mean, you flip a coin on the two in between. Joe Lombardi, the OC for the Chargers this past year. Jonathan Gannon, the defensive coordinator for the Eagles this past year. I think what's interesting, Seth, they're kind of mirror images of one another. They've both been coordinators for a year. They both have extensive backgrounds across many different accomplished head coaches. Both pretty young, but one's an offensive coach and one's a defensive coach. If their resumes all line up in terms of experience and who they've coached under, if we score those as a tie, do you have a preference on an offensive mind versus a defensive mind for the team?
No, I don't. Okay. I don't. I guess if everything ended up as an absolute tie when it comes to like actual charisma, leadership ability, all that stuff.
Is that the tiebreaker?
I mean, if you could create some world where everything else was an actual tie, then I would go with the offensive-minded guy just because then you don't have to worry as much about your offensive coordinator getting plucked. It kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where you might, in theory, believe that, hey, it shouldn't matter whether it's an offensive or defensive-minded guy. The problem is because all these other owners out there want to hire offensive-minded guys, that means that your offensive coordinator has a really good chance of getting plucked away every time you get good.
Yeah.
And that's where you get a little bit nervous about it if you're a defensive-minded coach. So in theory, I mean, but that's all very you know what I would do if I were the owner? I'd fire my GM for not being able to come up with some kind of tiebreaker other than offensive-minded or defensive-minded.
Yeah, get creative.
Like, you're
going
to tell me that's the only difference between these guys.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, if the tiebreaker were a triathlon, I'm taking Jonathan Gannon. Dude is ripped. He's shredded.
Who are the most yoked NFL coaches in terms of like being really fit and healthy? Capers was actually pretty fit.
Kind
he
of
always
barrel
kinda
chested.
Had that barrel chest
yeah,
tone.
Yeah.
Really good posture.
Yeah.
Jack Del Rio, maybe. I don't know.
You're talking in history or of the current?
I think there's a certain amount of NFL coaches aren't always the healthiest looking guys.
Right.
Usually big bags under their eyes by this time of year.
Robert Saleh runs steps before games.
I feel like that means he's doomed to actually win a Super Bowl.
The fatter you are, the better a coach you are.
Pete Carroll might be the fittest recent guy to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, I mean, the Super Bowl last year was Andy Reid and Bruce Arians. Like, if you're an aspiring head coach and you watch the Super Bowl last year, you're running straight for a giant plate of chicken wings.
That's the old eating chicken wings while they're on the elliptical machine
right.
Coaches workout.
Absolutely.
Sean, that's the funniest thing about playing football, honestly, in the NFL especially, is that those guys, they all work out. Like, they run, they do everything, but they're just so stressed, sleep deprived, and otherwise just not paying attention to what they're eating, that they'll run like 5 miles a day and just be sloppy as hell.
Yeah.
Because everything else is so askew in their life.
The best.
But you see them every day up there. They'll be wearing like the rubber top so they get a good sweat in, just killing themselves on the treadmill or the elliptical.
I think the best you can settle in for, this is where I feel like Bill O'Brien is the gold standard. The best you can hope for is to settle into like a Bill O'Brien phase, like a dad bod. Like, I'm guessing O'Brien got up on a treadmill for 40 minutes a day, maybe just to break a sweat. You know, he's always wearing sort of something sweatsuit-ish to press conferences and stuff. I think the complimentary dad bod is the best that you can hope for.
I'm gonna go back to like, there aren't a lot of guys that like have impressive physiques or anything in the last couple decades that have won, but I would say the fittest Super Bowl champion head coaches have been, in order from most recent to first, Gary Kubiak.
Yep.
Pete Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
John Harbaugh keeps himself in pretty good shape.
He looks like it, at least in the face, yeah.
Coughlin, especially in the playoffs, he gets that ruddy complexion when it's cold out. So people don't realize he's as fit as he is. But for his age, Coughlin was pretty fit. Oh, okay. Tomlin. Yeah, there's actually quite a few guys.
You're kind of making a case that you better be in shape. You're kind of making a case that could be a glitch in the Matrix. Unless you're Bill Belichick or in shape, you're not winning a Super Bowl.
So we need
Andy Reid.
We need a fit coach.
Gannon.
Yeah.
Gannon.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, Sean Payton, I don't know. He doesn't look fit. He's got dad bod.
He's gotten kind of dumpier through the years, yeah.
Dungy, though. Dungy doesn't...
Like, Dungy's just a skinny human being.
Dungy just looks like he's what are the people that have the funeral homes? A mortician. Looks like sort of a mortician's physique. Like, he got kind of like a he'd very good at giving like appropriately soft handshakes and saying I'm sorry for your loss.
Not the first thing I thought of, Seth.
Well, while overcharging you for your coffin.
Right. Knowing
your time
the
of
life
grief.
Insurance is going to pay the tab. Absolutely. Yeah.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.